Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's episode, we're going to dive into the chaos gods of 40K, also known as the Ruinous Powers, how they came to be, what drives them, and kind of set us up for our deeper dives into some of the gods that we're doing on the following episodes.
We're going to argue so much today.
Yeah, we've got some strong opinions, actually.
Well, it's not even just that fact. Is a lot of what we're going to talk about today is all of the stuff that they've never canoned or clarified, and there's a ton of conjecture online for the past 30 years about
intentionally.
Yeah. But I'm saying we're gonna try to concise that up to one podcast.
Yeah, you know what I got? A microphone.
I'm gonna tell the world my opinion.
Yeah, it's that's how opinions work. Like, look, I got an opinion and publishing and editing software.
And before you go team. You know, I'm gonna preface this with I've been wrong. I'll be wrong again when you're listening to me today, because I'm gonna say what I think, and a lot of people are going to go, Brad, you are so wrong. Also, you know what I do want everybody to do? Because I think this one's going to be one of the ones that we're going to have wildly differing opinions on. I would love to have some Discord feedback on this.
Yeah, please.
Don't be afraid to throw it down and go, here's my 10-point essay of why you're wrong about this.
Oh, yeah. Well, you will. I've said this cast numerous times. I mean, please like and subscribe to the cast, obviously. But if you don't like something or think we got something wrong, come to the Discord and let me know. People, you can just look, there's lots of ways to let us know, but if you do it on the Discord, I can actually respond to you and apologize if I'm wrong, and we can then make changes to later casts where we'll come in and actually call it.
I want to apologize. I'll just accept the fact that I'm wrong.
Yeah, and I'll write it out. Also, I just want to thank a bunch of you. Now I am where the Xbox listeners are from. A bunch of you have left me notes.
Apparently, I need to know this though.
Yeah, well, they play it. They listen to our podcast while they game.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, I had no idea. And then people were like, yeah, listen, I pop it on
also,
Xbox.
How place. Are they doing that?
We're both way too old to be asking questions about technology.
Somebody needs to message me on how to do it. I kind of want to do that now.
If you could also add the Google results for how to open a PDF for Brad and I, it would be very helpful for the two of us. So we're going to do some other casts in the future on the other gods, like the Eldar gods, what the Imperium calls a living saint.
It's a demon.
It's a demon. It's 100% a demon. But it's a living saint, Brad.
The Emperor is being powered by the warp right now. Continue.
Yeah.
I won't even get into that.
Oh, that. By the way, that cast is going to be fun. Oh, the Black Ships cast. Whoo. So let's start at the beginning of what is the warp?
I mean, we're going to start on a contrary notion on this.
All right. Well,
let's go in the beginning, though. The warp, when the old ones were using the warp, and this is... This may not even be the first people that use the warp. It was just the first people we know about.
Right.
The warp was a never-ending, serene lake of power. But it's the inverse. It's the flip. It's the other side.
Yeah.
It's the upside down.
It's just the inverse of the galaxy. Exactly. Where the galaxy is material beings doing material things, the warp is emotion. It's thought, it's feeling.
It's thought become manifest, though, because when you think, it's not even just think, when you feel something, it becomes reality in the warp. And the old ones were able to Zen mojo it, to use the power of the warp to make the smallest splash possible. They would have been great Olympic divers.
Oh, yeah, just the...
Right in. But they used it for... What, millions of years
without really
doing anything to it? It wasn't until, Eldar ruined everything. Cough, cough, sorry. But humans did a little bit of that.
Well, it depends. According to GW, humans did a lot of it.
Just
makes no sense, and we're going to get there. The one question is about the warp. It's a little bit tricky from a gameplay standpoint, is Warhammer 40K exists entirely within the Milky Way galaxy. But the warp, the Immaterium, I would assume would have to extend beyond.
It's everywhere.
So
the problem is that I think that
just
the
warp. Issue.
I know, but
they can't write it because it becomes a challenge. But
I think that the warp is localized also.
Okay. I mean, again, we can make this up as we go along. They did.
But that's my belief, though, because I think that the warp has a landscape like space has landscape. You know what I mean? It has I always have to think of it as the upside down because it's the flip of the galaxy, or sorry, of the universe.
Yep.
So the Milky Way only has, there's a warp for everywhere, but I think that the Milky Way has its warp. Alpha Centauri has its warp because it's just far, because there's distance and all.
I guess, that makes sense. It just becomes, it's the question is, do the warps, so you're saying they all have their own individual warps, they don't overlap. Like Nurgle doesn't exist in Alpha Centauri. Or they have their own Nurgle.
They have their own Nurgle. Okay. And maybe Nurgle exists there.
Again, it was a question I was like, I don't know how to answer this.
It goes back into, is there distance in the warp?
Yeah. And sort of, we'll get to that when we cover the Chaos Gods. It's like, because they do have their
own realms. They have a semi-topography.
Yeah. There's a map.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
There's a map. Don't find yourself using that map. Bad.
I mean, but the warp is effectively infinite. They have said that multiple times that the warp is like the universe. It's an infinite
expanse. Yeah. Okay. So from there, we kind of go into the origin of the gods and the warp. And so this is what Brad was talking about. At the time of the war in the heaven, the warp was just this, it was a tranquil sea of power. It was this flat, just endless amounts of energy you could reach into.
Because I really think that the old ones, in my mind, the old ones are, I mean, they're basically slammed, but whatever.
Yeah.
But they have that monk on the mountain, the ability to be super disciplined. Because I actually think that the old ones could just throw down Dragon King-like powers, and I'm full D&D old school to get on this one. But they could just, they could have hurled, for instance, in the War in Heaven, I really think that they could have just went, I don't think that I want Necrontyr to be here, but they would have corrupted the warp, and that's not what they do.
Oh, basically, they had to fight the Necrontyr in a materium fashion, because if they used the immaterium, then they would have created.
They would have, because they would have used emotion, because they could have drawn on that. Don't use the fire magic in The Witcher. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's. I think that they would have wrecked the warp. I think they have to put constraints on it because they know that we will ruin this. But in winning this battle, we will lose the war of forever, basically, because what happened, and it's partially their fault.
Almost exclusively.
It's exclusively their fault.
Yeah.
Exclusively their fault is they went, hey, we're losing this war. Let's make the race of poets that we made into a race of OCD psycho warriors.
Because this was the problem. If we talk about the warp, when we discuss the war in heaven, one thing we kind of say is that before the Necrontyr, came back at the old ones. So the Necrontyr and the old ones fight, the old ones push the Necrontyr back, the Necrontyr become the Necrons and then reemerge. In that period of time is approximately when the old ones were uplifting the Eldar. And the Eldar were being uplifted to be poets. They were being shown how to use the warp to like make a building, to craft music. The warp was
to make being used literal for music good. Reality.
Yeah. It was being used. The warp at this stage was primarily a source of good. It was being used. They were curing disease with it. They were doing all of these things with it. And then the Necrons show up with C-Tans, and it's like, hey guys, I need you to drop the clarinet. In fact, if you could use the warp to turn that clarinet into a bright lance, that would be
This is why it's such a big deal, and why I think that they didn't do. They didn't do it justice, because we're going to get into how GW has said humanity created most of the strife in the war. But
Eldar, we just both don't believe that.
No, because Eldar, the old ones made Eldar to be their lives to be intricately connected to the warp.
Yeah.
Because they legitimately started making thoughts reality.
Mm-hmm.
They legitimately sang like Wood Elves did, if you go Elysium stuff, they sang their buildings into existence with Wraith, all that thing. That's all warp. And then they took that and went, hey, guys that are intimately connected to the warp, we're not going to give you any more training on how to be disciplined about this. And we need you to fight right now. Also, is there any way you guys could throw some lightning bolts out of your eyeballs so you could kill these people?
Yeah.
And they're like, I play the flute and this guy bakes. And you're like, Stop doing all of that.
All of those bakers became warp spiders. All of the guys playing the flute were dire Avengers. Like that was how fast this went. It was like basically they took the marching band that was the Eldar and broke them up by instrument and just gave them each a different gun.
And they went, hey, I think this is going to have some serious long lasting consequences. Like, yeah, it'll probably work itself out, right?
Well, that was the whole thing is I think that the old ones did this real quick and were like, hey, guys, come here. We're going to teach you how to fight using the warp. Because they assume, well, once we win, we'll
fix it.
We'll fix it later. And then the enslaver plague comes into play. And the old ones all are like, hey, we got to go now.
Smoke bomb.
Yeah, bye.
They create your smoke bomb.
And what ends up happening is that the Eldar are left just going, well, I can make anything I want with this. So I'll just go ahead and keep doing that.
And this isn't a straight Eldar cast, but I do have to sidetrack it on why I think that the Eldar are terrible for the warp, because Eldar, and this has been multiple times they've talked about it, Eldar feel everything 100/1,000 times more than humans do.
Right.
All emotions wise, not like pain,
yeah,
but like any feeling, the Eldar process this so much stronger, which is crazy, by the way, for a super long living race.
Yeah. They care more than any other race.
Yes. About everything. Any tragedy is horrific for them. Mm-hmm. Every victory is amazing. Every tragedy is the worst ever. And this takes a toll on the warp. And it takes a little bit more toll when they become psycho fish hooks and butthole guys.
But yeah, they get a little bit loopy with this.
Yeah.
And so what ends up happening, though, with that is, as we've discussed, the old ones disappear. The Necrons disappear. The C-10 are dead. And the Eldar are looking around at the Krork and the Jokero, who, again, we're going to cover the Jokero. I really wish the GW would do more with them. But anyway, the Krork
are pretty excited.
Yeah, the Krork just kind of F off for their part of the portion of the galaxy and have some fun wars. But the Eldar then spend 60 million years messing with the warp.
True story.
With no – and it's actually interesting. When you read Eldar lore, it's kind of this conflict of – they seem to know that they shouldn't be messing with the warp this much, but then seem to have that kind of natural urge of like, yeah, but everything's easier if we do.
So. Again, it's a civilization that is, I think about something and it materializes in that was their technology.
It was.
It materializes in the real world.
But the seers were pointing out that, hey, this is
no
one cares.
Sorry, John. I'm going to tell you, the fact that when you think something into being is bad, you're like, cool.
I'm going to keep my hand is a pain in the ass.
Yeah, I'm probably just going to go ahead and keep magicking things into being, and you can go to hell.
So we could all get together and magic into being an entire city in about, I don't know, 2.5 hours, or we could spend a century,
lifetime,
building it. I'm going to go ahead and keep doing – I'm going to go with option A. Option A still feels good.
Keep doing the bad magic, guys. And
And whatever. It's someone else's problem.
I mean, it didn't come back to haunt them for a while.
Go ahead and kick that can. The reason this matters is that the warp itself feels these emotions. So what ends up happening with the piece that the Eldar either didn't understand, didn't care, whatever it is they were actually creating an infinity circuit for themselves. They were pulling energy out of the warp to do things. But as they did those things created emotions, which then fed the warp. So they were actually taking the energy and feeding it back in, which indicates it's like cold fusion is a good thing. Yeah, someone just finished Fallout. But in the case of this is a bad thing because the warp doesn't just take the energy. It shifts the warp.
But let's do this because we want to go – I'm going to steal your thunder hardcore and go into that criteria also. No, but I have to do canon versus arcanon.
Yeah.
Because, and we're skipping around just a little bit because GW canon is when humanity came into play, which doesn't happen for 60 million years.
Yeah.
That is when the gods became up because of all the emotions of humans. But Eldar broke the sky. And
let's shit on them hard here. Okay, so according to GW,
I can always count on you for that.
Let's do this. Okay, so according to GW,
before you shit on them, I am going to talk about what I'm doing right now. So I'm basically an old lady that's always cold, and even though we're on a cast where no one can see me, we just recorded the first. The second one, I said I can't have a blanket on me that restricts my arms, so I'm trying to figure out how to cover myself while still flailing my arms around like a wild person.
Brad is wearing a blanket over his chest. He keeps pulling it up like a woman who's ashamed of changing at the beach. That's what's happening. That's why I keep looking across at him, like picking it up, like picking up the blanket over top of his chest, like some sort of modesty. He's wearing a shirt, by the way. It's just weird, and I'm just letting it happen because we have wine. So anyway, the issue I have with this is, according to GW, all of the chaos gods are really born primarily out of
humanity.
Well, except for Slaanesh, not just humanity, out of the Dark Ages. So just for comparison, at the era of the Dark Ages, so pre-Black Plague, global population was around 350 million.
There's six people compared to
350 million. The Eldar were in over a million galaxies at this point. Star system.
Star system. Sorry. Over a million
star system at this point.
And they were also at the height of the power.
I'm assuming
they were also full-on warring for shits and giggles, and two-thirds of their civilization was part of a pleasure cult.
Yeah, well, that was later. That was later.
But I'm saying that's still before humanity.
Yeah, it's true. They were doing that for a while. That's somehow,
millions of years.
The Eldar, so if I'm doing my math correctly, they're basically saying the Eldar were averaging less than 350 people per star system because humanity really had a big impact on the warp. It's poor writing. That's all I'm going with. But whatever. So according to GW's viewpoint on this, the warp was mildly affected by the Eldar's existence for 60 million years.
Who are intrinsically tied.
Yeah, and using it every single day to do everything. All sorts of different things.
And bad things too.
But the wars in Europe were enough to really move the needle on this.
That is the canon. My canon is that the gods were already there.
Yeah.
This is, you know, I'm gonna do my GW shill at the same point in time as I do my what I actually think. What I think is that Eldar gave the psychic energy for the gods to exist. Humanity is so hardcore, so short-lived, and so emotioned up that we brought them into sentience.
Sure. I'm just honestly just going to take what GW wrote and go ahead and ignore it and just do it and do with what I would, to me, makes more cognitive sense. So what I believe happened was that over time, the effects of not just, because it's not just the Eldar, you also got, you've got numerous, what was the alien species the Dark Angels were fighting?
The Ragdan.
So you've got Ragdan. You've got humanity. You've got Votan. Well,
Ragdan
somewhere.
Were super psychically powerful, wildly warlike races.
That's my point.
Warlike races.
The entire galaxy, even though you may not have, like the Eldar had their section, but the entire galaxy is behaving in these ways that feed chaos. Khorne is being fed by battle.
Which is everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Tzeentch is being fed by a desire to expand, grow. I mean, Tzeentch would have loved the Necrons. I mean,
I'm going to steal John's thunder on this, but this is the Barsadi theory.
Yeah.
Oh, which yeah. is I didn't write that this, yeah. While the Necrons were a non-warp sensing entity race,
yeah.
The Necrons here, they still would have an effect on the warp by the fact that they were holy shit violent. The Necrontyr, by the way, makes humanity look like a bunch of like
the Necrontyr hit Girl Scouts. All three of the original Chaos Gods dead on. They hit Khorne by being incredibly warring. They hit Nurgle by being desperate to get out from underneath the plague
that infected 100% of their civilization.
And Tzeentch.
Oh, because they were plotting and scheming against each other.
They could not love technology more. Yes. They were, in my mind, actually significantly more. They should have had more of an effect on the warp than humanity did. Because they actually were doing the stuff humanity did, but there were more of them, and they were more desperate and more depraved in their actions.
They were also wildly short-lived.
Yeah. Well, we don't. The problem with that, those short-lived Necrons.
They live for
400 years versus an Eldar.
True.
Like, you know, it's like,
yeah, you're like, you don't live forever. You're a bum.
Yeah. Ugh. How do you guys even live? You're like a mayfly. What is your purpose?
So to be in line with GW, because you don't want to be crazy on the canon,
yeah.
But also that's how I rationalize that.
That's fair.
For me, because I think that you powered up a god and then the humanity put the cherry on top and made them.
Pushed them over the edge, which maybe.
That's how I feel.
We can get into that in a bit where it turns out like some of the gods really get their power more from people reaching out to them in desperation. So.
And I think humanity did them because done, yeah. I don't think the Eldar and I don't, the Necron 2 didn't even know about them.
That's true. Yeah.
And the Eldar were callous in the fact that I'm above everything. I don't need to reach out to anyone.
I guess the argument could be made of the races in the galaxy. Humanity is the most likely to make deals with chaos gods.
Humanity was aware
and
willing.
That's the thing. The Eldar, I don't think the Eldar would have made, because they had their own gods.
No, because they were so arrogant, though.
They also had
their own gods, but they're also a race at the height of their power. Eldar felt that, why would I ever make a deal with...
Well, to be fair, I mean, in that regard, we talk about really quick with Nurgle. Like, if you're humanity, you would make a deal with Nurgle to relieve your suffering from, say, the Black Plague. Whereas if you're the Eldar, you have Isha. So, hey, can you make me better? And Isha goes, yeah.
Isha, but also they were kind of mailing in, which is why they got defeated. We're not even going to talk about that. But that is why they got defeated, because Eldar didn't worship their gods at the time, at the height of their, at the creation of Slaanesh, pre-Slaanesh and about to be Slaanesh. They were whatever.
Yeah, it's going
to be their gods.
I'm just telling you guys now, the Eldar cast might be 8 parts.
Yeah. I mean, there's a big thing because the Eldar have caused a lot of problems.
You and I both love Eldar. It's got some of the best lore in the game, and they're the oldest, and they're the oldest race in the game. Not a good combo for two casts.
Well, they're the oldest race in the game, and they're also like, that might be our fault. Like when you're going over everything that's happened in history, you're like, so
we also did that.
Our bad guys. That's our bad on that too.
We'll be right back after a quick break. It's time to accept it. The holidays are upon us, and finding gifts for people is never easy or really fun. Luckily, we at the 40K Lorecast have a new sponsor, which will help you make your holiday shopping fast and easy. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Add some personalization to your holiday shopping with Uncommon Goods. Did I go there and buy the game Fart Bingo? Yeah, I did. Is it for my child to play with his friends? We'll go with, yeah. At the same time, I was able to get a cocktail smoker. So yeah, those are probably all for me. Anyway, that's what's great about Uncommon Goods. They have uncommon, get it, collection of items you can choose from, allowing you to pick up a fun variety of items this holiday season. You'll find thousands of gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/40klore. 40KLORE. That's uncommongoods.com/40KLORE for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
But getting to the birth of the Chaos Gods, what, according to the GW, the canon is effectively over time, the warp began to ripple. And so this serene lake became ripples. Those ripples became waves. As more and more emotion flooded into it, that's where this power starts to grow, it begins to thirst, for lack of a better phrase. The warp begins to deals.
I think it's the deals that be made.
Well, the deals come later. What I'm saying is initially,
But I'm saying that happens. Yeah. That's what I 100% believe, because the gods got powered up.
Yeah.
So that they're there, and they are effectively infinitely powerful because they have an infinite, again, air quotes, source of energy. So they are infinitely, possibly powerful. And then humanity basically put the chair on top and makes them
cross.
Allows them to cross. Yeah. They allowed them to be fully sentient with a, in our time sentient. They were already immensely, they were beings of, immense knowledge and power, but they had, for us, they didn't interact in ways we can understand until humanity went, I will give you whatever.
I'll make a deal with you if you'll let me do this.
They started making deals with the devil.
And that's where it begins to come out. Right. Because what happens is this thirst, what I liked is, and I forget actually where I read this, so I apologize, I should source this one, but effectively it starts off with just kind of, you know, we'll use corn. People wage war, they kill, there's battle lust, and that ripple is growing into a wave. But at a certain point, you know, like any wave, the wave goes down. And when the wave goes down, it kind of gets sad. And it goes down because, you know, the bloodlust has ended. So it begins to search for more bloodlust to make that wave larger and larger. And what you, with the stories you get is, you get, people start getting whispers in the backs of their ears. You start getting dreams because the chaos guys, they gain enough sentience to be able to reach, you know, this is primarily humanity, reach into humanity to start saying, hey, you should do this thing.
I'm going
to
give you the why. Mm-hmm. Tzeentch and Korn still kind of go together because Tzeentch whispers all the, you should get power. You should want more knowledge. You should want everything your brother has, the neighboring country has, whatever. Yep. It puts all of those thoughts in, and then Korn gets the reality of all the things that Tzeentch put in. So they're both,
Tzeentch and Korn, they work together pretty well, despite it not is, wanting
like,
to.
I know, but like they go together really well.
Yeah.
And that's also why those two don't war as much as the others. And
don't worry, guys, we're doing some casts on them about how much some of these Chaos Gods hate each other. Ooh, Tzeentch and Nurgle.
Just saying, in the game, you can do Korn, you can do Tzeentch, you should not do Korn and Slaanesh. I'm just throwing that out there.
The challenge with the warp is that there is no such thing as a limitless source of power.
There is.
Oh.
I disagree.
Fine. There's a, you might be able to always draw from it, but
there's a difference between limitless and consequences.
That's a better way of putting it. Yeah,
there's wild consequences. I don't 100%.
The warp is a limitless source of power if you feed it. The problem, what I'm getting at is that if all, so we'll use, man, we're jumping ahead here. We'll use the Tyranids. If the Tyranids were to conquer the galaxy and eat the galaxy, there's an argument to be made the warp would disappear because there would be nothing to feed the warp anymore.
I think that the warp would just, I think that the warp would be different.
Necrons conquered the galaxy. It would be, but if a non-sentient, it was actually more of a Necron thing. If a non-sentient creature.
Or non-warp type.
Non-warp type. But just, it's more like maybe something that just doesn't. Because the question is, what would the Tyranids do? If the Tyranids ate the entire galaxy, consumed all the biomass of the galaxy and left the galaxy.
I think that the warp would be fine because the warp is infinite and everywhere.
Fine. But the argument about the warp is that if you remove what feeds the warp, that's why I don't think it's limitless, because if I remove what feeds it.
You know what? We will just move on from that because we have.
One thing we kind of want to talk about is the way that the gods started coming into being in this last little bit of sentience. I think it's interesting to talk about how they were originally affecting the mortal realms, for lack of a better term for it. And it was these whispers and there's these things, because it wasn't just that they would whisper in your mind and tell you to do something. It was twofold. They would whisper in your mind to tell you to do something. And then when you did that thing,
they would
reward you. So
this is why I think we pushed them over the edge.
And this is because it's easy.
Because I think that they were in the Brad Con. Mm-hmm. I think that they achieve full what they are now, our version of sentience. Yep. I think they were already powerful beings, sentient. But when they kept sending out, because that they're so powerful that they just do things because they are thought and feeling made manifest. Yep. They did things because that's what they do.
That's it.
Scorpion stabbed you while you're on the wave. That's what I do, man.
That's what I do.
Because they did that, but then they started getting something back from the thing that they were already just they were so powerful that they're sending that out.
I think two good examples of this would be like a Korn example is the first one. So a Korn example is Korn sees a potential champion. It was like a Genghis Khan type scenario and whispers in Genghis's ear to begin a conquest. Genghis does this, begins a conquest. And as he wins, Korn imbues him with more and more power, which makes more and more people fall behind Genghis. So it's not only is Genghis more powerful, but now he has now his retinue is growing.
And this is why the Tzeentch also, because Tzeentch makes mm-hmm. him have more ability to politically be powerful in his
take
ability.
Over an empire.
He knows over. He's lording. He mm-hmm. has knowledge of how do I make this happen? How do I make this large empire exist? Well, because Tzeentch keeps giving me more and more ability to manipulate my opponent.
Because Tzeentch, and what happens, because what these Chaos Gods are doing, it's not just they want you to do the action. They want people around you to do the action. Because the more that are doing the action, the better. They may even reward some of them a little bit, but they're going to reward you the first because they're trying to make you their champion. The other example I was going to, I couldn't figure out one for Slaanesh, or like for Nurgle. For Slaanesh, for the safety of us keeping a good rating on this podcast, we're going to go with British Baking Championship. for Slaanesh, it's the same thing. Where but Slaanesh is, as much as we talk about the pleasure cults of the easy one for Slaanesh, a lot of actually early
it's success.
It was success and perfection. That was the idea. It was if you want, you're a composer, you are an artist, you are a cook. I mean, the more I wrote this, the more I realized that any of you ever worked in a kitchen, Slaanesh.
Yes,
it really
but
is.
But it's also Slaanesh. It's the artist thing. It's mm-hmm. Slaanesh is a patron of the arts.
Yep.
Horace
Heresy, like the Horace Heresy novels, yes. Right? The big tapestry.
Yes.
Really great story.
But the thing is that you didn't turn, screw it. The Emperor's Children didn't get turned because they wanted to be a pleasure cult.
No.
They got turned because of perfection mm-hmm. of the Emperor's Children was known for perfection. That's what they strove for. But in striving for perfection, you strive for excess.
Yep.
And that's how they got them. They didn't.
And you gain vanity, which creates.
Yep.
And that's what all these gods have is they also have an exploitation. Khorne is exploiting fear of failure. That's what it does. Nurgle exploits your fear of death. Tzeentch exploits your fear of unknowing.
Fear
of fear. And Slaanesh exploits your fear of failure. That's what these guys were. Slaanesh's biggest one is that you put all this effort into being perfect and you're not perfect.
Well, you're going to be chastised. You're going to be seen as lesser.
And these are all such raw emotions. And this is where the GW may be correct in their writing that the humanity feels these raw emotions a lot more. And given that humanity has a much shorter lifespan than an Eldar, yes, you would in theory get more stuff.
The thing is that Eldar may feel it stronger, but humanity is so much more willing to make a deal.
Yeah.
Because Eldar, in their unlimited vanity, yes, they broke the sky and they made Slaanesh.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that in a minute. But you can't offer them a deal when they go, I'll just make reality what I want it to be.
Yeah. My guess is Tzeentch, I do think, probably had some effect into Eldar. The more the Tzeentch and the Black Library.
Because they were conniving on each other.
Because Tzeentch has his own version of the Black Library. Is why I'm saying that. Like, it's like they kind of line up really
true.
Well, but the rest of them, like again, Nurgle and Isha negates Nurgle. Slaanesh, Slaanesh obviously was a big piece of
Slaanesh was a problem.
Yeah, Slaanesh, okay. But outside of Slaanesh, I would do Slaanesh, then Tzeentch, probably distant then Khorne Nurgle as far as
Kane is just Khorne, but.
Well, that's my point, because they had their own versions of it.
They had their own versions of each god.
It didn't matter for them. They had their own thing, which
except for the laughing god. We'll do another.
It's going to be a really fun cast. We'll have to do a cast just on Eldar gods.
Laughing god's boss mode, but continue.
Anyway.
But the biggest thing is that the gods are effectively getting what they want from humans more than they've ever gotten from anyone.
And this is creating an exponential growth of the warp. Under the Eldar, it was kind of a nice linear, linear line, and now it is
meme lords, get your stonks meme out for me, because that's what's happening.
I was gonna be old and do inflation in Greece in 2000.
Boo! Stonks is where we want to go,
stonks
John.
Is where we should go. Yeah, stonks is much better.
You know who's got their pulse on what's hip? Mm-hmm. The 52-year-old man. By the way, by the time half the people listen to this, I'll be 53. So
me as well. We're both. I'll be 43. I won't be.
I was going to say. Yeah.
We're a decade apart.
Unless they're listening to this 10 years from now.
Maybe. Who knows? Who knows?
Hopefully, actually.
Yeah, it'd be great.
It'd be awesome, too, because I'd be alive. Yes.
Well. Well, I mean, digitally.
I love that you're like, whoa, slow your roll, man.
Slow your roll there, Brad. Let's not plan that far out for you right now. All right.
I would probably go, are you going to get home today?
Yeah. Let's focus on episode 200, not episode 2000. That's what I'm getting at. You know, like, I love you to death, buddy, but you know.
Vegas doesn't have you living that long.
Yeah, the odds are not great on. Yeah, I mean, next 62, yes.
72.
Anyway, so this takes us to the Immaterium. Effectively, this is before Slaanesh kind of bursts into its own version of reality. So
Slaanesh does set.
This is before Slaanesh.
Yes,
the gods take form.
Gods take form. Gods have their realms. Slaanesh pisses off pretty much everybody, except for Nurgle, who just doesn't care.
Yeah, Nurgle thinks Slaanesh is cute.
Yeah, because Slaanesh changes the topography of the war.
Well, yeah, but let's go pre-Slaanesh. So okay. Pre-Slaanesh, these gods all burst, and their order is Khorne comes first, followed by Tzeentch, and then Nurgle, which I still think it should have been Khorne, Nurgle, Tzeentch. That's just me personally, because I think Nurgle had a lot more of.
I mean, if you're talking about humanity having a problem, the Black Plague was.
I think plague, pestilence, rebirth is more common than knowledge, but whatever.
I wasn't looking for hidden knowledge while I was dying.
Yeah, but whatever. I'll let them do their thing. They wrote it, not me. So they burst, and not only do they now take form. So all of a sudden, like, we can actually describe what Khorne looks like. Tzeentch is a tricky one, and we'll get to that later. What Nurgle looks like, by the way, it's a great unclean one. Just the biggest great unclean one you've ever seen.
I mean, you're trying to say what Tzeentch looks like? You mean the Lord of Change doesn't maintain a static
form? For some reason, it's got a weird
form. Doesn't maintain a static form? Yeah. I will slap you from here.
But also, the warp actually now takes form. The warp fraction, even though it's infinite, we do get like regions within the warp that have shape, function, buildings, etc.,
which are also always shifting and changing.
Yeah, there is it's and then eventually Slaanesh joins the party, which the other gods, by the way,
wrecks everything,
super not happy about. And each of these regions that they've got are there to serve their purpose. They've got servants, they've got entertainment, they actually wage war against each other. It's pretty cool.
But they don't just wage war in the physical sense. They don't wage war as I'm going to hit you with my sword, you know. They wage war, and it's like the devil on that. They wage war on a emotional, for your soul.
But they actually wage war in the war.
I mean,
they do invade.
But I'm saying they're even invasions on that are a lot of times on in another emotional thing where they're trying to convince and make people do things, because again, thought is manifest, emotion is manifest in the warp. So it's not just I will punch you, it's I will unmake you. I will basically corrupt Nurgle. Nurgle just tries to corrupt realms sometimes.
Yeah, he gets bored.
Yeah, he just goes, oh yeah, I lost every fight we've ever had, also everyone that fought me is sick now, so yeah. I mean, that's a real thing.
See what I just realized? We're a half hour into the cast. Maybe we should describe the four gods.
If you're going to be nitpicking about stuff, John.
Fine. There are four gods.
Screw that. I get to talk about the explosion of the warp then.
Fine. There's technically a fifth, which we're not going to cover because it just got retconned out of the game.
And it's also, there's possibly a sixth, Stamper. And also you can talk about the Tau god.
In the new book, yeah, that would.
There's also a Tau god, possibly.
There's not a Tau god.
You just hate Tau so
much.
There's
not a Tau god. No, there's nothing could love the Tau.
Oh, that's hurtful talk. So hurtful. But first off, Slaanesh, before we go into the describing him.
Of course.
Slaanesh explodes because Eldar have issues.
Yep.
Slaanesh is the bane of the Eldar. Slaanesh, screw everybody on this. Slaanesh is an Eldar god, period. It might not be a good Eldar god, but it is an Eldar god. What? Where do Eldar souls go when they die?
They do, but I don't think I would argue with you here because Isha's still alive and Isha can't touch humanity. And Slaanesh can touch humanity. That's the only reason I'd argue with you on that one is that Slaanesh.
I'm going to talk about the gods now. You know what? Yeah. I'll let Discord tell me about what my thoughts.
Please, yeah. Please give your opinion here, because I think it would be interesting people think about that. That's kind of where I'm drawing the line, is I think that the Eldar gods, there's a couple random stories of them touching humanity, but for the most part, they don't. But the Chaos gods do. They touch.
I mean, they touch.
Slaanesh does a lot of touching.
Yeah, it's Uncle Touchy. But let's talk about the Chaos. So Khorne is the god of war.
Yeah, god of war.
The easiest to understand, the easiest to go.
Yeah, but when we say war, though, it's like it's not just war. It's and it's violence, it's brutality, but with but also strategy. It is Khorne.
No, Khorne does not like strategy. Okay, Khorne likes bloodshed, my friend.
Well, maybe strategy is the wrong word. Conquest is actually probably the better one. Yeah, he's the god of conquest. It's not strategy. He hates strategy. He likes conquest. He likes victory.
It's not even just he likes victory. Khorne likes the fight. Khorne likes war. Because think about it, when you summon blood for the blood god doesn't mean your enemy's blood. Blood for the blood god means anyone's blood.
And on that note, Khorne doesn't like defenseless slaughter. He wants real war. So we're going to talk about Slaanesh. Reason Khorne hates Slaanesh is we talked about at the Siege of Terra when the Emperor's children just effed off and went to go just raid the gap and murder everybody.
That is not Khorne.
Khorne just sees that as like you're just attacking innocent civilians who are unarmed. Not because they're innocent, but because they're unarmed.
It's Khorne doesn't like cowards. Khorne wants the fight in the fight for the fight.
Yeah. In fact, Khorne actually might reward you more if you fought and got killed in the fight. He's more likely to raise you, give you more power so you can try it again. If you're a person who gets in a bar fight with, say, 10 other people.
I love that you're pointing at me.
I mean, it's been like 30 years since you did this. But like, you know, 80s were a hell of a time.
I love that 30 years doesn't actually put me in the 80s.
I know, it was the 90s. Fun side note. I was at Costco earlier today. And I was buying something and the person had this, they saw me. They put in a birth date. I was buying wine, right? And the birthday they put in was 1999. And it bothered me that 1999, like, oh yeah, at 1999, you can buy alcohol. The level of difference between that date and the date I was born hurt my soul.
You know, I'm adding to this because screw it. You can edit out if you want, but I think people like this story. I was just at a tournament and there was three people at the table and the waitress asked for IDs and I looked at her like with a quizzical look and she goes, well, not you.
There we go.
That's a real story just happened. She's like, no. Well, obviously no.
Obviously not you. You're fine. So Tzeentch is the god of knowledge, sort of. So it is the god of knowledge, but it's actually also the god of deception as a result of it.
The best part about Tzeentch for me is Tzeentch overlaps with Khorne so well.
Yeah.
Because he's the one driving these battles, these conquests, because you want power, you want knowledge, you'll get that by doing this.
Yeah.
How am I going to go about this? Tzeentch, I would argue Tzeentch makes more wars happen than Khorne makes.
Oh, very much so. Khorne makes conquests. Tzeentch makes wars. Tzeentch, the galaxy shifts because of Tzeentch.
Yes.
Yeah. Khorne planets shift because of. That's how I would describe it too. Tzeentch is also is a trickster and seems to just like to mess with things for the sake of messing with them to the point, and we'll cover this in our Tzeentch cast. No one's really sure what Tzeentch's play is because it's so heavily layered with deception on deception on deception.
But, there's a place Tzeentch,
he may not even know.
Yeah, but also doing. Tzeentch is planning for forever.
Yeah.
So you're like, hey, it looks like Tzeentch took a big L. You're like, well, not really, because 100,000 years from now, Tzeentch's plan is going to come to fruition. You're like, what does that have to do with me? You're like, oh God, no, nothing.
Nothing. Yeah, this is just Tzeentch doing
stuff. I live forever. Why would I give any shits about what happened today?
Nurgle is the next one.
Papa Nurgle, grandfather. Nurgle's Nurgle, actually thank my you favorite, very much.
Of the Chaos gods, Tzeentch and Nurgle, I kind of bounce between which one I like the most, depending on the stories. I enjoy Nurgle because Nurgle is entropy. Nurgle is he's known as the god of plague and decay, but he's more than that. Nurgle is also the god of rebirth, because what Nurgle knows is everything. Effectively, if we break down chemistry to its lowest level, there are a set amount of atoms available in the universe. They are ever expanding.
They come back as something else.
Yeah, there's a set number. So in order to make something new, something has to be broken down. That is what Nurgle does. And so Nurgle is inevitable, is the term that they use for Nurgle a lot. Nurgle's viewpoint is it a little bit gross? Yeah, he's pretty smelly. It's pretty smelly. If you've ever eaten bad oysters, yeah. Nurgle.
After I ruin stuff, well, I mean, something will grow out of that.
Yeah,
though.
Exactly. Like Nurgle, like if you get violent diarrhea, know somewhere that violent diarrhea, those carbons are going to get broken down and it's going to be turned into something.
Like down the line. Went to violent diarrhea.
Well, that's what Nurgle does. I mean, Nurgle doesn't do like the, like, oh yeah, there's a happy, you know.
No.
Yeah. A lot of fiber bowel movement. That's not Nurgle. Nurgle's team, like.
I mean, the destroyer box. Is not,
yeah. Right. Nurgle's, you know, grip the sides of that porcelain throne and let it rip. That's a Nurgle maneuver right there.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
But Nurgle is really cool because Nurgle plays, of all of them, he actually plays the longest game. Whereas, you know, we talk about Zeench, he's trying to do all these trickster things. Nurgle's just inevitable. And that's what makes Nurgle kind of fun. And his followers all know it.
And he kind of also doesn't give a shit.
No, Nurgle's the least shit giving of all of them. He's the happiest of all of them, too.
Grandfather Nurgle.
Yeah, Grandfather Nurgle, because Nurgle knows.
Also, Beast of Nurgles, all they want to do is play.
That is true. We'll talk about Beast Nurgle.
I mean, you might die because of it.
I actually wrote notes.
You 100% will die because of it.
Yeah.
But they do want to play.
The Nurgle armies, especially the Demon Army, I think is the most fun. And we're going to talk about this in that cast, but Spoilpox Scrivener, you know, it's just fun.
Slimex.
Slimex. I honestly just like, Nurglings.
He's riding a snail?
Yeah, Nurglings. Yeah. I just like Nurglings.
Yeah, why can't they take an objective? Because they're untrustworthy.
Yeah.
That was their old special rule.
Yeah, and they got rid of it.
Because they ruined shit.
Yeah. So the last one, though, of course, is Slaanesh. So Slaanesh is the god of, it really is the god of, they call it the god of excess, but Brad said it really well earlier, and I'm going to go back to that. It's the god of perfection, because in the pursuit of perfection, you will get excess. That's really, I think you said it, like, that's a really good way of saying it.
He's literally a Patreon of the arts, and that is literally where I actually was correct for a change when I said literally, but he is. It always goes bad in the end, but in the beginning, your boons from Slaanesh make you a better artist, musician, whatever your artisan skills are, a mason. You get your boons from Slaanesh, and they do make you better, and in the end, the floor is going to always fall out. It's the same. Read single story about doing a deal with the devil. There you go. That's Slaanesh.
Yeah. Monkey paw, deal with devil. They're all the same. It's all Slaanesh. Everything. But Slaanesh, what Slaanesh does is Slaanesh feeds off of your desire for perfection. Like it is just, you need it. And
that's why he grew so fast though, because it was the easiest.
Oh, very much so the easiest. Now, as we've discussed all of them, one thing to note, and we've been hinting at it, but let's dive a bit more into it, is these gods hate each other.
I can't.
Some more than others, but
I can't put enough H's on the hate.
Oh my
God. It's hate.
And it's so capitalized. Like,
and this is why also Chaos hasn't just wrecked shop through the galaxy, because every single time that Brad worshiping Korn and John worshiping Zeench, and we're about to raid the final floor of the main boss,
we immediately start punching each other.
We immediately attack each other. You're like, we're about to win. Mm-hmm. We're about to make the final level, beat the final boss.
This is not shared glory.
Yeah,
we are not sharing
glory. Ever, never, ever, ever.
And this is referred to in the the warp as the great game.
Yeah.
They are constantly trying to. And the truth is, when you read about the great game, it sounds like they're trying to kill each other, but it's not really likely that these guys can even kill each other. It's more they're just trying to undermine each other and create embarrassment.
And it's almost like a Joker thing when he's like, I don't want to kill you. Because I think that if any of the gods could actually kill the other god, they would be, whoa. Well, then I couldn't battle against you. Why would I want to do that?
Why would I bother with that? This is boring.
That's crazy talk. But that's a talk for a different day on that.
Yeah. The one exception to this, though, was the Horus Heresy.
There's been fantasy players. Come on now. But we had an Archeon.
This is a 40K lore cast.
Yeah, fine.
Not the Warhammer Fantasy lore cast, which, spoiler alert, the game died. The unique exception was the Horus Heresy. And this is only because, as we discussed, the Emperor at one point with Malkador did a little walkabout into the
Emperor's a dick.
Got from the Chaos Gods the secrets of how to make the Primarchs, told them he'd do something in return, did not do it, and the Chaos Gods went.
By the way, Super did not do it. The Emperor went, hey, man, can I have this knowledge? And they're like, for this knowledge, you have to do A through Z. And the Emperor went, I will 100% do every one of these. And then immediately left. The Chaos Gods went, I don't think he's going to do anything.
He's not coming back.
He's not coming back. Like, I feel like he's not even going to start with A. And he did not. He did zero. Yeah,
in fact, now did the Emperor not do the things that he's.
Oh, he started doing the opposite.
Yeah, he began took
the
working.
He actually took everything they asked for and made a plan to counter A through Z.
Every single one of them. The Emperor went to the Chaos Gods, made a deal with them to make them more powerful than ever before. It's kind of like the hint we've gotten from the lore, and instead endeavored to make them no longer exist.
Yeah, had a long plan of this, which he probably could have told his sons. We won't get into that.
It would have been nice. I mean, just
British dad should have probably just talked for 8 seconds about it. We wouldn't have had
tell Malkador and don't kill him. Who knows? Anyway. So these guys, the Chaos Gods did align for a little bit, and this is how they were able to be so successful in the early parts of the Horus Heresy. Horus was not corrupted by a Chaos God. He's corrupted by
all the Chaos Gods.
Now, different Primarchs, not as successful. And as we kind of saw over time, that fracture started to fall apart. And where did it fall apart? At the moment of glory. As we get closer and closer to
actual victory. At the actual time of Horus was about to win.
Yep.
And the gods went, I don't care. I want all of my guys to win.
Yep.
And then they lost. And as soon as Horus is gone, there was zero. They went from zero to hero hero to zero, actually, on that. Because as soon as Horus is gone, it's almost a shockwave. They're instantly back to no.
Well, I mean, immediately, all of the trailers all turned on each other as soon as Horus is gone.
Instantly,
boom, done, and we're attacking, killing each other
with no care for the fact that you guys are still fighting these guys. Don't care.
Oh yeah, they were attacking. I mean, it was actually funny. There were Chaos Legions. I mean, traitor became Chaos Legions. We're attacking each other in front of Loyalist legions who were like, so do we.
Like, who are we even shooting at?
It's that scene of Monty Python and Life of Brian where all the rebels, the Romans are standing there watching them all stab each other. Like, I guess I'll just arrest Brian.
I mean, it's a big deal in that. And the thing is that's why, and it's the same thing, you know, evil corrupts and that's why evil hasn't won is because evil always turns on itself. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that has been the case. So.
Yeah, and I think from the end of the Horus Heresy, the gods' power explodes, and because as I was shit talking earlier, the Eldar had conquered the galaxy, and that wasn't enough to really move the gods. But one small planet in the middle of the Milky Way, a corner of the Milky Way with 350 million people, birthed three Chaos Gods. Take that one planet and make it. Millions, because the Imperium's in over a million systems, so now it's millions. The population we talked about on Hive Cities,
which are also weird,
yeah,
wildly more populous than the Eldar.
Yeah, this is.
I mean, it's 1,000. It could be. I don't even know the number.
It's probably a million times more. I mean, the truth is that you're looking at
a low birth rate civilization.
Well, a Hive City can have 20 billion people in a single hive.
Yeah.
So a planet could have 100 billion.
Yeah, I mean, Eldar's planet, like any Eldar planet, was a joke compared to a hive.
I mean, the humanity and every one of these souls does reach into the warp in one way or another. So
so many of them are willing to make a deal at a moment's notice.
And so this is where
Eldar never would.
Right. And so this is why we're at the 42nd millennium. The gods are actually more powerful than they've ever been in history.
Well, also the Dawn did make that.
Yeah. And then Abaddon.
Abaddon did make Walmart it up, the Imperium.
He did help it out a little bit because
he cut the galaxy in half. You said helped it out a little bit. He was a greeter.
Yeah.
No, he cut the galaxy in half.
And spilled the immaterium into the materium.
He Voltron the sky.
The Chaos Gods at this stage are more powerful than they've ever been and have more access to the materium than they've ever had.
Yeah, you're like, hey, I'd like to go over there. You're like, you'll have to go through the warp. Why? Because the dude broke the sky for the second time.
Well, yeah, the first one was kind of a little, if we're being honest, the Eldar didn't really break the sky that badly when you compare
they it. They put a hole in the sky.
They put a hole, yeah. They
Abaddon Voltron the sky by putting a slice all the way down.
All the way down. That's what I was going to say.
He cut the galaxy in half.
Yeah. One of them like, hey, you poked a hole in it. Oh, we should plug the hole.
It's tough.
Yeah, they could have plugged the hole.
Yeah, they mean the Necrons had a plan.
Yes, there was a plan to plug the hole. This is an abandoned ship. Like, so from here in the next few casts, we're going to do two casts doing the four gods, splitting them up two and two. But what we wanted to do is spend some time on kind of generic forces of chaos, because one of the things that there's certain things that all the chaos gods have in common. So we wanted to dive a little bit into that. Yeah, it's cultists. I mean,
let me check
the notes. Yeah, it's just cultists.
Well, we have
and demons. It's cultists and demons.
Well, but we have to talk about cultists and why. Because everybody goes, why would you ever follow a dark guy? Oh, you know why you're going to follow a dark god? Because the Imperium is hell. We already did casts on this. Hive world, it just sucks so much.
Every part of life in the Imperium is hell.
You're like, why are you a cultist? Because yes, that's why I'm a cultist. Because
someone offered me anything.
You're like, hey, man, I was going to make your day not putting nails into your eyeballs. You're like, yeah, I'd like to not do that. You're like, you could probably lose your soul. You're like, yeah, I don't care at all right now.
Yeah, I mean, so, but we'll go back to cultists actually are interesting because cultists predate Horus Heresy.
Yes.
So the cultists have been around and the Imperial history doesn't give us enough detail on this, but what we do know is that a lot of the worlds that were discovered during the Great Crusade
were corrupted
chaos
like planet wide.
Although interestingly, none of them knew the god that they were worshiping. Like Colchis is one of these, whatever Cadia was called originally. They just worshiped a chaos god and weren't sure what it was. Well, and it's because this was a nightmare.
Well, the thing is that right after the Dark Age of Technology, which was literally the Golden Age of
it was the Golden Age until it was this nice little inflection point of like.
I mean, it was a long time.
I am sure Skynet was awesome up until it wasn't.
True. But, I mean, Skynet went bad after they clicked it on, but whatever.
Yeah, true. But
you're like, those 8 seconds were awesome.
Yeah. We're going to defeat the Russians. Oh, it's us. Okay, it's over. Fine.
So, but the thing is that we had these disconnected planets. Remember, the Imperium has worlds that aren't self-sufficient.
Yep.
If you're in a non-self-sufficient world and all of a sudden you are cut off because... Mm-hmm. Exactly. So you start worshiping whoever will help you out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened on it's not like a world here and there. There was tens of thousands of worlds.
This is, we talk about the Great Crusade, and especially we did the cast on Dark Angels about the First Legion. Sometimes they had to eliminate an entire planet, every single living species. Why? Because they were all
chaos.
Yeah, they're all corrupted to chaos. So,
and a lot of those people didn't even know they were corrupted by chaos. They just knew that I'm doing what we have to do because everybody was going to die.
Well,
because
I've been doing this. We've been doing this for 1,000 years
or more. Yeah. Can you think? Remember, we've had where was the Dark Age of Technology? It's a vague time.
It's a vague timeline, but yeah, you're right. I mean, it could be tens of thousands of years somewhere in there. I mean, you were completely cut off. In the 42nd millennia, though, there's even more of this. And it's just...
Yeah, it's because the Imperium's a trash fire.
Yeah. I mean, because...
This is why Bobby G woke back up and went, come on, man.
Jesus, guys. All right, fine. I'm gonna remake the Imperium for the second time.
When Glover just shows up with the pizzas and goes,
come on.
What's going on?
So what you're seeing, what happens in the 42nd millennia is exactly this. The... Mankind, a chaos cultist, they came actually usually from not even a bad place. It's just someone gets a little bit of joy from doing something. And it's actually a chaos god. And they tell everyone else, hey, I started doing this thing. maybe you should all do it with me too. And then we're happier. It starts off on like a badminton club or whatever it's going to be. And eventually they're carving symbols in their chest.
But let's go on that though, because that's the thing is like people go, wow, I've had a lot of people actually talk about this because I'm willing to start a nerd conversation up in a moment's notice, by the way. But I've talked about this and they go, well, how would everybody ever go into a chaos cult? You know what's going to happen. No, you don't.
No.
One, the Imperium puts down any knowledge of chaos.
Yeah, no one's aware this exists.
They're not coming up to you with you're worshiping a chaos god. They're saying, I can make your life slightly less
awful. Let's go back to something we talked about maybe 20 minutes ago, where the chaos gods are infusing a person. So Tzeentch, Nurgle, Slaanesh, Khorne, they're infusing a person. They're infusing a leader with greater power. So you're looking, it could be something as simple as like, you know, you want to rise up against, you know, you're in the body, you're in an underside, an underhive, right? You want to rise up. Well, this one gang seems to win all their battles. I'm going to go join them. I don't realize they're a Khorne, you know, warband because they don't know they're a Khorne warband yet.
Most of the time in the Imperium, you find out so far down the road what is actually happening that it's wildly too late because all you were trying to do was go, everything sucks. Can it suck less? Not can it not suck. Just can it suck,
a little bit less.
Because the Imperium is, again, a nightmare. Sorry, Imperium friends, but, like, it is a nightmare.
No one wants to be an Imperial.
Well, for the regular people, when you're a super soldier, shit's on point. But, like, if you're Brad in the 42nd millennium, stuff's not great.
Stuff's really not great. And this is where, like, these gods would be. And so kind of just go through the corruptions that you'd have. Nurgle, you're going to get plagues. People go to Nurgle to get relief from the plague. How he gives the relief, we'll cover later.
Not even just relief. I don't want... This is the mistake ever. Yeah. Mortarion made this mistake.
Yeah.
I don't want to die. And Nurgle goes, finger guns.
Yeah, no problem.
Got it.
you won't die. Damn it.
You're like, so I'm still horribly injured. You're like, yeah, but you won't die. You're like, I should have read the fine print. I should have definitely not just click yes.
I mean, a Khorne warband is easy. Tzeentch, the same thing. If you're an inventor, you're an artist, you're just trying to break through, Tzeentch will do it. And now you join this cult of people who all worship Tzeentch.
And you did, again,
Well, you're producing the best art, the best music anyone's ever seen. I mean,
because it's literally magically infused.
You don't know that. Like,
I lost because my art wasn't magic.
And we'll get into later some of the stuff Slaanesh does there, which is actually kind of cool. Like, I get a kick out of it.
I mean, your painting's probably always going to win when it's interactive with your audience. And you're like, I lost. Why? My painting wasn't magic.
But, you know, but even Tzeentch is one of my favorites where people are just trying to gain a little bit of knowledge, a little bit of this. I'm trying to invent something.
And I mean, Tzeentch, it's all politicians.
It's actually not, to be fair. What, you know, Tzeentch really is? It's psychers. It's a psyker who's got some psychic powers, and this is why.
Yeah, but I'm saying from the regular folk, he has every politician in his bag.
Oh, he does. Tzeentch, we're going to cover.
I need knowledge and power.
We're going to cover Tzeentch in a little bit, but Tzeentch, just teaser for that episode, because it actually is the next episode we're going to do. Tzeentch represents the least amount of cults in the Imperium, and he's the most feared by the Imperium.
Because he has all the leaders.
And psychers.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, what are the two worst things? Them. So that's the cultists, obviously. The other commonality throughout are, of course, demons. We're talking about, you know, chaos gods. We're probably going to have to talk about demons. Demons fall into kind of three categories: lesser, greater, and prince. And that's what they are.
Yes, but you can't even do it in those order because, like, the greater demons would be mad that you just compared them to demon princes.
Demon princes are more powerful than greater demons.
Sometimes.
I know. It's
demon princes are people that have been elevated demon prince. Greater demons are the most manifest of the will of the god.
Sort of. A changeling is a lesser demon. Actually, the changeling, only one of them, is a lesser demon.
True.
And he's more powerful than...
I'm just saying that...
It's fine. We're going to cover it. Don't worry, guys. That was a weird little
named
note.
Greater demons are going to be like, hey, you just said a demon prince? When you talk to
Yeah. If, yeah. Bellacor is.
When Rodigus shows up, he's like, who's the demon prince that said was talking shit, basically? Yeah.
Fair. Fair. The
Scarbrand?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Scarbrand would probably have an opinion. Well, the Scarbrand versus Angron.
I mean, they probably wouldn't debate it out.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of hitting.
Yeah. I don't think a lot of like, I have this PowerPoint. This,
yeah. So. Can I walk you through my essay? you know, don't worry. I cited my sources. Source number one is chainsword. Source number two is axe. All right. So we'll start with kind of demons and their forms. Demons at their core exist to serve the Chaos Gods. They're a manifestation of will by the Chaos God.
And they are formless until
exactly.
They have to do a function.
And then they gain.
That is a thing. That is a real thing, though, mm-hmm. because they do not, lesser demons are nothing mm-hmm. until they
have to be something. And so the lowest form of these ones, we'll kind of go in order of basically size. We're just going to do size because power varies. As Brett and I were just kind of messing around with, the power of these guys swings around a lot because you get some small guys who are light years powerful and some big guys who are just pointless. So the smallest are demonic beasts, dogs, horses, bulls, manta rays, you know, whatever it is, whatever the god wants to manifest as an animal that just kind of does its will.
And these are get in the way kind of people. Mm-hmm. They have no real... I guess it's intelligence. I mean, it is what it is. They are bound by will, but they kind of act on whatever.
The most basal desire that god has.
Yeah, exactly.
With the exception of Nurglings who are a little bit weird, because
Nurglings are a giant, higher form, because Nurglings are awesome.
Well, Nurglings are mini, 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 mini Nurgles.
Yeah,
that's all it is. It is the smallest version of a Nurgle.
They also have free will because they do whatever Nurglings do, what Nurglings gonna do.
Right, but do they have free will or do they just have
poor impulse control? Untrustworthy is all I have to say. I would say
they have poor impulse control, but yes. they have one impulse, and that is to do Nurgling things.
Yeah, they're basically gremlins.
Yeah, Nurglings are awesome. Yeah. They really are awesome. Even the model's cool.
Yeah.
So the Beasts of Chaos and Nurglings, they're just the basal level. The next one are the lesser demons. And these have
it's the most populous.
Yeah. This is the majority of it.
But it's also it's what the gods are known for.
Yeah.
You're talking about your bloodletters.
Bloodletters.
Talking about
screamers.
Yep.
Poxwalkers.
I mean, it's just you're talking about your plague bearers, your mm-hmm. bloodletters, your daemonettes, mm-hmm. you know, your whores, the in 40K, the battle line guys.
Exactly.
These are the things that are most populous, and they are the soldiers there, mm-hmm. and they are dumped out in what could be infinite numbers. Yeah. If you could project the emotion enough,
they will never stop coming.
They will. Exactly. If you could give enough battle, you could have a never ending surge of bloodletters. The problem is that you can only fight for so long.
Yeah. Eventually everything dies. They didn't have a basic level of intelligence, although this does shift a lot. The problem with lesser demons is there are a couple lesser demons who are incredibly powerful.
You're also, the thing is that if you give a named, because we're going to do that a lot, actually, mm. named.
Yes.
Named ones leading other ones can make this have way more tactics, way more.
And I could be savvy. Wrong on this, but if I'm not mistaken, I don't think you graduate up. I don't think you start as a Beast of Chaos and then become a lesser demon and then become a greater demon. I think it's the god manifests them individually with different levels of power.
I think they grow inside of that, though.
But what I'm getting is I think that you don't have like
it's not like demons and deity.
Exactly. Yeah. They don't grow. They just, they are.
You don't go from larvae to lesser to greater. Yeah.
When a gray and unclean one is just something that Nurgle creates from its core. And since we're talking about gray and unclean ones, we'll jump to greater demons. Greater demons are greater than lesser. That's kind
of you know what? I'm going to end the cast with that. That is all the knowledge you need.
That's about it. They are a larger version of a demon who are more
imbued. Well, they are not larger. That is a wild understatement. My bicycle is slightly smaller than a Sherman tank.
Yeah.
Both provide transportation. That is the same analogy that you just gave me.
Fair.
Greater demons are massively powerful, and they're also massively intelligent.
Yeah.
Sources of their god's power.
And they actually can act in as the god.
Well, they can, they act independently. They can start system-wide, multi-system-wide wars and incursions.
Lords of Change are known for, actually more often than not, when we see a Tzeentch infection or a chaos cult, it's actually not from Tzeentch, it's from a Lord of Change.
Yeah.
You know, the same with like great unclean ones.
Plotting and scheming. They're shit is going down. When you actually see these guys,
yeah,
shit has hit the fan. They don't show up by themselves.
Oh, they're showing up with an entire army ahead of them.
Because they also have to have, again, for demons to be made manifest, you have to have an overabundance of their emotion, their feeling, their war, the lust, their excess, the whatever it is. You have to have a shit ton of it to have these guys show up, which is a big deal on that.
Yeah, they're really, what's interesting about them is that when you kind of start reading more and more of the lore around them, you'll discover that they end up actually becoming the hand of the god more often than not, but they act independently. They because they're a manifestation of the god, though, they rarely go against the god's will.
They really can't because of the fact that they're made up of the essence of
Scarbrand's the only one because he
he got jacked by Tzeentch.
Yeah, and then punched Khorne, and now he's just.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you got to get thrown for 8 days, and then your wings get ripped off.
Exactly.
Because Tzeentch told you you could definitely take Khorne on, which was basically like an infant attacking a Titan, but whatever.
The last one is a little bit, and Brad hinted on it really well earlier, demon princes, who are both more powerful and less powerful than greater demons.
Holy crap.
Depending on the moment.
I mean, this is such a wild scale.
Yeah.
Because you have Demon Prince Ted, who beat up 5 guardsmen.
Yeah, and he's a demon prince. And then you have Mortarion.
Yeah, those are not the same. That's true.
Yeah, Mortarion.
Again, meme lords, give me this the one. These are not the same.
These are not the same. Yeah, you're right. Mortarion versus a great unclean one, I think Mortarion kills it. A great unclean one versus a demon prince of Nurgle just giggles and just.
He's not even sure. He accidentally goes, oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were just, you were talking to me?
Yeah,
I'm so sorry. I accidentally killed you.
Yeah, I just missed moving on with my day.
Bad. Yeah. I was reaching for my coffee and I punched a hole through your face.
The only thing that makes demon princes important is that a lot of demon princes are one of the few pieces of chaos that can manifest easily inside the Materium because a lot of them.
Because they're mortal before.
Because they were mortal before. Because of that, they serve a really key role for the chaos gods. Because
they have a connection.
They can
they are like the Eye of Terror before it was the Rift, I guess, of Terror. But no one ever talked about that. But I don't know what we call it anymore. It's just the Rift. But the thing is that demon princes are staging points for incursions because they exist in both.
Right.
Because they have 1 foot in, 1 foot out. And they are a lot of times more important to the gods than the greater demons. Actually, they're always actually more important.
They're more important because they can do that one piece. Because
they're key pieces.
It allows them to actually, whereas the greater demons allow them to affect the Materium, the demon prince allow them to enter it, which is more important. So
100%.
The last little kind of piece on them that we should talk about is they are all immortal. When you give your soul to a chaos god, you become effectively immortal. That soul always belongs to that god.
I mean, it's a huge boon and a huge suck.
Yeah.
Because, well, you're immortal. For those of us that are trying to stay alive, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, this isn't immortal like a vampire or...
No, so I have to do your bidding at all times, and sometimes your bidding sucks. Yeah. And every time I die, quotation marks, I come right back to you and immediately have to go do whatever the hell you want to do.
It's a reincarnated immortality. You're not immune to harm. You're not immune to death. You just die and your soul is owned by the god who then just remanifests you to do the thing you're supposed to in the first place.
And sometimes that thing sucks. Yep. Most of the time.
Ever.
It's like, yeah. And ever.
Yeah.
So this is a weird deal.
The last one, let's just also touch on, because if we're going to cover the four gods individually, I want to spend a little bit of time just briefly on Chaos Undivided.
Chaos Undivided is so weird, though.
Yeah, because it's because the reason I want to do this is because I don't want to throw people the wrong direction. I don't want people thinking that chaos is only one of four choices. There is another choice, and that choice is Chaos Undivided, where multiple forces of chaos get together and fight together for a common goal, like Horus Heresy.
But the thing is it's not just Chaos Undivided isn't, I appreciate all the gods. Sometimes it's, I don't care about any of the gods.
Yep.
I'm just touched by chaos and now I need power. And then there's others that don't know any better and just they just know chaos exists.
They haven't given themselves over to an individual god
yet. And then there's, I don't know, Perturabo, who went
there. Yeah.
I don't even care about chaos, but I just wanted to kill Rogadorn.
Yeah. And apparently I'm here now. So how's this work?
And or people like, I'm crazy, like Conrad Cruz and the Night Lords, which, like, I was real busy being a serial killer. Yeah. Are you going to be let me be better at doing that?
Conrad's interesting because Conrad really is Slaanesh and Khorne.
Yeah.
He wants to be the best night murderer.
I mean, he's also Tzeentch.
Oh, he's also Tzeentch.
Because he can see into the future.
Yeah. I don't think he's got any Nurgle.
He doesn't want to. I mean, he's real jacked up. He could just be accidentally by Nurgle.
That's true, yeah. But that it's that piece. So Chaos Undivided is Abaddon's Black Legion, obviously. That's Chaos Undivided. But there's another one who is very prevalent if you play the tabletop, and the model's freaking incredible.
It's bonkersville.
And that's Belakor. Belakor, first off, if you've
first
never seen
Demon Prince.
Yeah, it was the first Demon Prince. It's actually one of the oldest models in the game. It's one of the few models that actually crosses over into fantasy and 40K.
Well, similar lore, by the way. He's the first Demon Prince in both.
But what I'm saying, correct me if I'm wrong here, he's in 40K, he's in Sigmar, and he was in fantasy.
Yes.
So there's only a few that actually have that have that distinction.
And he has almost the same lore in everything.
Yeah. So Belakor is the first ever Demon Prince. No one knows where he came from. Even the Black Library of the Eldar have no idea where Belakor came from. There just are whispers in the galaxy.
Well, he's also forced Semai to be the gatekeeper for the new chosen.
Yes.
Which he hates with a passion of a thousand suns. One of my favorite stories, and this is fantasy, but Archaon was going through his trials. Abaddon did a very similar thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Belakor was forced to go, here's your boon. I hope you die. Like tomorrow. Like if it's not today, I hope it's tomorrow.
Yeah. Belakor's name. And I want to do more on Belakor, but there's just not as much we can do yet. There's more. Is it because there's a demon codex coming eventually that'll give us a bit more on him? But Belakor.
He's fantastic.
He's the most. He is. For those who know and are aware of the forces of chaos, Belakor is the most feared element of chaos.
He's also a master manipulator.
That's why. Because he is. So Belakor, we talked about Abaddon's ability to manipulate the dark gods, in which Abaddon's able to get these boons from the dark gods. And Abaddon is juiced up and he's got all the powers. Abaddon's been doing that for 10,000 years. It's been in the warp. But 10,000 years.
Belakor has been doing that for...
Yeah, since the warp started.
Yeah, who knows?
Belakor has endless amounts of...
You don't even know what he is.
Yeah.
Like his original whatever he was...
No one knows.
No one knows.
He's just a giant...
You know, screw that. He was a Necron tier.
Maybe he was a C-Tan. Who knows? Belakor is incredible. But what's kind of... What he does really well is... So Belakor will wage wars... with multiple factions of chaos at his side. He's one of the few who's been able to pull this off.
And he really, one of the best parts about him when he does this is Belakor isn't trying to get momentary glory. Belakor has plans upon plans.
Yeah.
And that's why Belakor is so interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Same reason Abaddon's interesting to me, because he's not looking for...
Well, they're the same in that regard. Belakor, Abaddon is trying to break the Imperium and conquer the Imperium and tear it down. Belakor is trying to conquer the galaxy, you know, for the forces of chaos, but it's interesting because both of them would happily kill all four Chaos Gods if given the opportunity.
Oh, in a second.
There's no, they have no loyalty to those given.
Which is why they probably will never win, because at a moment of they think that any of them have weakness that they could kill him, they would kill him.
Oh, yeah. Khorne is very aware of what Bellicor is trying to do. I mean, he's just like, no, like I'm going to hit you with a hammer. Like,
yeah,
no.
I will supplant you at a moment's notice.
But Bellicor, when Bellicor shows up, what makes him so terrifying is that Bellicor will not show up with one set of demons. He shows up with all of them. He can even show with multiple. He's the only time from a lore standpoint that on a tabletop, you would see competing greater demons.
Yep.
The only scenario is if Bellicor is present, because he is powerful enough to actually bring them all together. And it's because he has convinced the Chaos Gods behind them that he's going to win this battle.
For
and
them.
They, yeah, and for them. And they would rather share the glory of a victory than have no glory of individual defeats. So Bellicor, this is Chaos Undivided. You see Bellicor, that's who he is.
Bellicor is Chaos Undivided.
Yeah.
Abaddon is Abaddon. Bellicor is Chaos Undivided.
Well, yeah, Bellicor is Chaos Undivided. My point is that Abaddon with the Black Legion,
Abaddon is...
I see your point, yeah.
Abaddon is Abaddon.
Right.
Abaddon is more his personality. Bellicor embodies Chaos Undivided because he's also sold out more into Chaos than Abaddon.
What is cool about Bellicor is Bellicor is the only one.
Yeah.
There is no, there are no lesser demons of Chaos Undivided. There's no.
In a lot of the stories you can look into, there's also some cool fan fiction, but whatever.
Right.
Bellicor has also made that a thing because he's pretty jealous about that. So he kind of.
Oh, he's incredibly jealous.
He shows up and you're like, hey, I was worshiping Chaos Undivided. He's like, well, not now.
Yeah, not how I was. So you can either die. Yeah, you're just
going to die. You're just going to die. Yeah. Let me look down my list of options. Oh, it's just die.
Yeah, cool. All right, well.
You can spam A because that's the only button you're going to be able to push.
So from there, we're going to kind of come to the end of this episode. On our next episode, we're going to dive into the first of our two Chaos Gods, which is going to be Khorne and Tzeentch. And we're doing this because we decided to pick the gods who hated each other the least and kind of start that way. So Khorne and Tzeentch hate each other the least. From there, the one after that will go Nurgle, Slaanesh. Whew. And we're going to dive a bit more into the gods themselves. You know, their lucky numbers, so to speak.
Well, they're followers.
Yeah, they're followers.
Because they have some great followers, though.
Yeah, and it's a really, and they actually also where their home, like what their home world looks like or whatever. We're talk about what their portion of the warp looks like and how it manifests.
Their realms, thank you very much.
And most importantly, how they interact with the Imperium and what the Imperium's viewpoint of each of them is. Because it is kind of a cool, it's a thing, like, Khorne and the Imperium aren't necessarily always at odds. There's some moments
where there's some people that think they're very loyal to the Emperor that are hardcore Khorne worshippers.
Hardcore Khorne worshippers, but the Emperor and the Imperium are kind of like, so they just keep winning? Yeah.
Nah.
All right. Like, we'll deal with it later.
Heresy's only heresy if you suck.
Exactly. With that, though, please again. As we said in the beginning, like and subscribe. Join the Discord. The link's obviously in the show notes. It's growing rapidly. We really do. I love the interaction we're getting out of this. It warms Brad in my heart every time someone says something nice about us, because we're both, you know, old people who just want a gentle touch every now and then.
Tell me I'm still alive.
Please just a soft tap on the shoulder.
I want to be relevant.
But more importantly, it really is great for us to kind of hear from you all. It does help us steer the cast. One of the challenges you have in a 40K lore cast is there is few hundreds of thousands of hours of content we could do. And it's nice to have people say, hey, I really want to know more about this, because it then sends us off onto a weird tangent that we then get to enjoy.
True story.
But with that, this is John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you guys next week.